This is your Polycast for Wednesday, June 22nd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a special legislative session is neither alive nor dead, and the St. Paul School Board dumps its superintendent. Michelle Bachmann, the former Republican congresswoman, is among 26 people appointed to Donald Trump's Evangelical Executive Advisory Board. Peter Cox has more.
The former Republican representative joins evangelical leaders like Ralph Reed, Jerry Falwell Jr., and James Dobson. Trump announced the group during a meeting with hundreds of Christian conservatives in New York. He vowed to appoint anti-abortion judges and allow churches to make political endorsements without losing their tax-exempt status. Bachmann is the only former member of Congress on the board. She served Minnesota's 6th Congressional District from 2007 to 2015 and ran for president in 2012. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Time apart isn't healing wounds at the Minnesota Capitol. Legislative leaders and Governor Mark Dayton resumed their special session talks yesterday after a week's hiatus. And when they got back to the table, the consensus is that they moved further from a deal on transportation taxes and construction borrowing instead of closer. But as Brian Baxter reports, no one is ready to bail out of the negotiations or give in yet.
You could call it the zombie session. No one seems to know or is willing to say if a potential special session is alive or dead. From DFL Governor Dayton came this assessment after about an hour of closed-door discussions.
I don't have a deadline. I'm not setting a deadline. You know, but at some point we'll have to see whether we're making any progress. If we're getting farther and farther apart, which is what the result is today, we don't need to get still farther apart.
And then from Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd.
There's a lot of, puffing out the chests up there and not a lot of rolling up the sleeves.
About the only common refrain is that the gridlock is the other side's fault. Dayton blasted Dowd for adding proposals to the negotiations. That includes a plan to prevent local governments from adopting more rigorous wage and benefit laws than the state has, and another to let low-income families qualify for tax credits toward private school tuition.
Unless he's serious about trying to resolve the differences rather than add to the differences, we're not going to get anywhere. So I'm very pessimistic at this point.
Dowd turned it back on Dayton. He says the governor expanded the scope of negotiations when he asked for additional projects for the construction borrowing bill and some budget items, instead of keeping things focused on a vetoed tax cut plan and a limited public works bill.
He unfortunately thinks it's unreasonable for us to expect to bring anything to the table for negotiations and that we should simply live with his entire list of demands. Sorry, I don't think there's a Minnesotan in the entire state that thinks that's reasonable. And if the governor wants compromise, he's going to have to be the leader and start showing some compromise, because he has shown zero compromise to this point.
The back and forth has been a source of frustration for people and groups with a stake in the unfinished Capitol business. Advocates for a long-term transportation finance package appeal to the state's leaders to reach an agreement for the good of the state. Golden Valley Mayor Shep Harris says a solution is long overdue.
Back together, but we need results. We need results now. We can't afford to let the politics of the present get in the way of the focusing on the future needs of our communities and the future needs of our state, especially when it comes to transportation.
As the latest meeting broke, Dayton and lawmakers left it open as to when they'll give it another shot. Dayton says he'll leave it to Dowd to reconvene the group. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota and 7 other Great Lakes states have approved a plan to allow a Wisconsin city to pump 8 million gallons of water a day from Lake Michigan. Dan Crocker reports.
The decision makes the Milwaukee suburb of Waukesha the first city located outside the Great Lakes Basin to be allowed to withdraw water from the lakes under the Great Lakes Compact. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton agreed to support the plan, but only after Waukesha reduced both the amount of water it proposed to draw and the area it will serve. Julie Eckman with the Minnesota DNR says the vote will not result in faraway cities making Great Lakes water grabs.
That concern is really taken care of by the compact language itself. There is a very narrow window where diversion can be granted.
Opponents say Waukesha had other options to meet its water needs. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
Valeria Silva has less than a month to lead St. Paul's Public Schools. The school board removed the district superintendent at a tense meeting last night. Solveig Wastvedt has the story.
Silva's superintendent contract ends July 15th. She'll stay on with the district in an advisory role until September 2017, pulling down her full current salary. The board voted 5-2 in favor of the severance package, which will cost the district just under $800,000. Board Chair John Schumacher says he believes the change will save the district money in the long run.
We need to take a major look at how we deliver education. So we accelerated the transition process so that we could, in fact, start that, bring in some fresh perspectives.
Schumacher talked with reporters after a packed board meeting with an audience that was clearly divided. Pockets erupted in cheers and boos as Silva's fate was debated. Principal Adrian Pendleton of St. Paul's Obama Elementary supports the longtime superintendent. She says Silva's leadership and racial equity work has helped her give students a bigger voice.
My thinking changed from, here are the children, I got to pour all this stuff in them, these empty vessels, to our children bring a lot of assets to our building, and it's up to me as a leader to find those and help those shine and help those grow.
On the other side, a group of community members showed up with signs reading, "You're fired," and loudly approved of anyone urging Silva's removal. The conflict mirrored tensions that have mounted over Silva's tenure. Enrollment in the district has fallen and is projected to drop again next year. St. Paul saw several incidents of student violence against teachers last year that prompted the teachers' union to move toward a strike. Earlier this year, a former St. Paul teacher started an online petition urging Silva's removal. Board member Steve Marchese said the leadership change will move the district forward.
It's about pointing us in the direction of the future. It's about giving our community hope that we can rally around leadership that we trust and we can get behind. It's around including everybody in the community in the conversation that needs to come about who will be leading our community, leading our district in the future permanently.
But the fact that the superintendent's buyout came on the same day as approval of the district's $715 million budget did not go unnoticed. St. Paul has a $15 million deficit for next year. The board-approved budget includes a reduction in money for schools as well as cuts to district-wide departments like Family and Community Engagement and the Office of Equity. Bridget Moore, chair of a district parent advisory council, questioned the spending.
To use money to buy out a contract when you're already doing deep cuts is beyond ridiculous. I don't believe you would balance your budgets at home the way that you're balancing the budgets at our schools.
Schumacher says money for an interim superintendent and other severance package expenses will come from changes in administrative positions. As the votes wrapped up, the drama continued. Board member Jean O'Connell declared she was resigning her seat. O'Connell was on the board that renewed Silva's contract last year.
I am personally taken aback by the way the current chair and treasurer of this board have worked in secret and frozen other members of this board out of major issues, up to and including the decision to buy out the superintendent.
O'Connell called the current board environment disrespectful, destructive, and cynical. Schumacher denied the accusations of secrecy and said the agreement has been under discussion for more than a month. The board named retired Roseville Superintendent John Tyne as the district's interim leader beginning July 18th. Schumacher says the board hasn't started discussing a search timeline. Silva did not comment on the agreement. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
St. Paul is another step closer to requiring businesses to give all workers in the city paid sick time. Under recommendations from a special task force, employers would have to provide an hour of sick time for every 30 hours worked. If the city council approves the measure, St. Paul would join Minneapolis and dozens of other cities across the country that already have paid sick time laws. Matt Sepik has the story.
David Weiss works several part-time jobs, including as a grocery delivery man in St. Paul. Weiss says if he's not feeling well, he has to make a decision: lose a day's pay or risk spreading illness to his mostly elderly customers.
I love this job, but without earned sick time, when I'm sick, I either gamble with my bills or with my health, my clients' health, and our community's health.
Weiss and dozens of other supporters of the measure spoke last night at a meeting of St. Paul's Human Rights and Equal Economic Opportunity Commission. The panel is reviewing recommendations for an ordinance that came from a 29-member task force. Co-chair Matt Kramer, who's president of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, says the proposed law would cover nearly everyone who works within the city limits.
All employers, regardless of size, are covered. There is not a size exemption. Family businesses are treated the same as any other business. Casual employees, which is a term of approximate art in many industries, including the healthcare industry, are not exempted.
Under the recommendations, employees would begin accruing sick time after working 80 hours at a job. They'd get 1 hour for every 30 on the clock and could earn up to 48 hours a year. Workers would also be able to use the accumulated hours as safe time if they or family members are victims of domestic abuse, sexual assault, or stalking. Kramer says city attorneys are still working on the ordinance's details, including whether workers in the city would be covered if their employer is headquartered outside of St. Paul. But business owner Diane Brennan is not waiting for the ordinance. She owns a hair salon on Snelling Avenue and began giving her staff paid sick time in January. Brennan says not only is it the right thing to do, it's also good for business.
We work with the public and we just can't be spreading around illnesses. Because people come to work because they can't afford to stay home.
But business owner Mike Schumann does not support the sick leave plan. He owns a furniture store on Grand Avenue and says his employees are like family. Many have been there for more than a decade. Schumann says there's no formal sick time policy, but he says everyone looks out for each other when someone's ill. However, he worries about competitors. Schumann says the proposal is unfair to small businesses in St. Paul because most municipalities in the Twin Cities metro don't have similar laws.
All of our competitors are in Woodbury or in Roseville or whatever. So when you come up with new rules that we have to follow that don't apply to our competitors, it puts us at a disadvantage.
However, if St. Paul does pass a sick leave ordinance, it won't be the only city in the area with one. Minneapolis approved a nearly identical measure last month. It goes into effect next summer. St. Paul will continue accepting online comments on its proposal through July 6th. The city council is expected to take it up in August. Covering politics, I'm Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.